The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
The Fold is brought to you by oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Kia ora and welcome to The Fold. My guest this week is Cam Wallace, who is the very newly ensconced CEO of MediaWorks. He has been in the job less than 3 months and has basically just bombed into media from the travel industry, where he was for basically his whole career prior to that. The interesting thing about Cam is that he's a media tragic and a very experienced executive, but coming into an area that he's never worked in before. And I've sort of met up with him a few times pre and post his starting in the job. And yeah, I got a call, I think it was around the time of the John Banks Magic Talk debacle. And he was like, basically words to the effect of, they told me this was a fun business. And I think there are a few people who've had a more chaotic entry into a new industry than Cam has. But I think it's to his credit that you see the quick and decisive nature of the changes that have been made. Banks was gone and gone forever within days after making those repugnant statements. Sean Plunkett, who had a similar but slightly different complaint upheld against him by the BSA a couple months earlier, followed swiftly. And while Magic Talk, I would be surprised if it hadn't changed in some respects before the end of the year, certainly. And I think that will probably be a good thing for New Zealand media, because I think the space that it occupies, the sort of news and talk space, is a really interesting one, and there's a lot that can be done there. But I think that brand was very much, it was trying to outflank ZB to the right, and with some views that just feel like they were from another time, because essentially the hosts were too. And I think it's good to see that rather than them sort of leaning into that the way it happens in the US a lot of the time, that it got moved on. This isn't a cancel culture situation. People can express those views, but there are consequences. He's also dealing with, in parallel, some very serious allegations against staff members at The Rock, which is a station, similarly, it's essentially the music version of Magic Talk. It contains these kind of ossified New Zealand views that feel like they were they were never acceptable, but they were accepted in, large parts of New Zealand society up until the 90s, but they sort of somehow, they persist. I mean, this in some ways, the fact that this isn't actually about the content, it's actually about the behaviour, that shows you the link between content and what the content sort of enables or implies is acceptable itself. But I challenge him on that, and I think you'll make up your own mind about the extent to which his views indicate a deep commitment to making change in that respect. I will say that friends I have who work at MediaWorks say that they have seen more of Cam in 3 months than they did with the previous CEO, Michael Anderson, over the course of years. And I think that being present and available as the CEO of a large organization is always a good predictor of being able to impact its culture. We talk about that. We talk about strategy and media and the Facebook, Google stuff and the RNZ TVNZ merger and all of these big pregnant topics. As always, The Fold is proudly supported by Vodafone. It literally could not exist without their support. Vodafone provides innovation made simple and world-class network technology, and it will help you maximize the potential of you and your business. Find out more at vodafone.co.nz. This is Cam Wallace on The Fold. Kia ora, Cam. Welcome to The Fold.
Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to start by, you made a decision that not many people with aspirations to sort of a long and fruitful career as an executive would do, which is moving from like what was until a year ago a sort of a booming up and to the right industry to the the sort of enfeebled and kind of not particularly functional world of media. What prompted that?
Oh, I mean, I've always had a deep interest in media and politics, so I was a big follower. I got to know a lot of individuals in the media through my previous roles, and obviously through, you know, advertising, you got to know a whole heap of people. So I've always had an underlying kind of view about the media would be an exciting place to work. And through circumstances, rather than having a kind of 50-page career plan, the opportunity presented itself. And that's when I was juggling, you know, commuting to North America or staying in New Zealand. And that became quite an easy option with COVID and MIQ and the ability to spend many, many, many months potentially in a hotel in New Zealand at the Jet Park. So I decided that being based in New Zealand for a few years would be the right thing to do. And it hasn't disappointed. It hasn't been boring, that's for sure.
Yeah. I was thinking about it. Like, I don't think it's ever quiet or boring for anyone in the media. Yeah. By its very nature as an industry, it's kind of combustible. Mm. But nonetheless, your first 3 months?
Close to 3 months. Feels a little bit longer than 3 months. Let's call it 3 months.
It feels like you packed a lot into it. What is something about the industry which you kind of, you know, as much as you were an avid consumer of it and had these relationships that you didn't discover until you were actually your feet were under the desk?
Well, I think there's massive longevity. So everyone I seem to meet in any media organization kind of seems to have 20, 25, 30 years. So there's a huge amount of stability and longevity in the industry. There's a massive passion for the product that people put out, whether it's TV, radio, print, digital. So people are truly passionate about producing good content, which is fantastic. And you do get the feeling of an energized workforce. So some of those characteristics which drew me to the industry are very consistent with what I'm seeing.
In terms of with radio, which is what percentage of revenues of the new slimmed down media?
Between 63, 64, so, you know, high 60s. It's a radio and outdoor business, and depending on the month, because there's a lot of kind of inherent seasonality and what happens with lockdowns, because obviously outdoor is pretty devastated when you have a lockdown. But high 60s to low 60s, depending on the time of the year.
And, you know, we were talking about this before, but radio seems to be, even within, you know, the context of media, it's its own animal. Like, as you said, that longevity, people move back and forth between print and television, and there is a sort of a media sphere, and then there is radio. Yep. There are links and personalities who work across them, but there is also this sort of strand of radio lifers who are just, they were born for that industry. They know its codes, they know its language. You see, like, there's a whole kind of bunch of, you know, hosts who have just been there 20, 30, 40 years, who almost, you can see their lives through the way they go from like a sort of a pop station to a sort of, that's you know, right. like the different demographics.
You're not going to say they end up on The Breeze, are you? You're not going to, you're thinking
do.
That,
they,
but you're
end
not going to say
The Breeze.
That.
Or maybe Coast.
Yeah.
Why do you think it is that it has that it keeps people around and kind of that has these really specific characters come out of it, almost more than anywhere else?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question because, I mean, I've felt that. If you look at the industry structure, it's a quite a condensed, you know, duopoly. So there's a small amount of market participants. Secondly, I think, you know, you make a big commitment when you become, you know, engaged in radio. So you generally go to radio school. That will cost you a bit in terms of fees. And that's a very distinct pathway. So my best mate, actually, who works at News Talk ZB, Jason Pine, he started, you know, training as a lawyer for a year and a half, 2 years, and decided, you know, halfway through it that actually he didn't want to be a lawyer, and he already had an inherent and underlying passion for radio. So pulled out of law and went to radio, and he's someone who is a true radio lifer. So it does for him and for a lot of people in our organisation, it doesn't really feel like a job. It's a passion. It's what they want to do. They're big communicators and they want to entertain and produce really high quality content, and they're really, really proud of that. So, you know, I see the interns coming into our business, 7 or 8 of them, and I see that passion and that energy and that desire to want a career in radio, not a short-term role or not to extract huge amounts of economic value. So it really is a passion for people, and it's a great medium in terms of getting people from the promotional area of the business through to on air, and then you can really build a career in radio. Radio's been unbelievably resilient. So in New Zealand, about 11% of the advertising revenue goes to radio, and that's been consistent for quite some time. And it's certainly a lot deeper and more structural than it is in Australia, and that's a byproduct of New Zealand being a small to medium business enterprise country and small areas around New Zealand connecting to local radio stations and really wanting to deliver product and promotions through that vehicle.
The thing with radio, I guess that's the sort of the positive side of it, that almost it's been less disrupted than other industries, and therefore building a career there still seems like a thing that you can do confidently in a way that you probably can't in certain other areas of the media. The sort of potential downside of that is that culture change with people who have been there for a very long time can be difficult. And yet, in your very brief time there, you know, you've had quite a strong impact on Magic Talk, which we'll get to. And, you know, you're now dealing with some allegations around behaviour and so on that, you know, to do with The Rock and other stations potentially that could be seen as kind of calcified relics from a previous era. Do you find that combination of longevity and a desire to do culture change can kind of clash at times?
Oh, I think in any organisation, in any industry with a pretty vibrant past and history, you have those challenges. I don't think it's unique to media or unique to radio. But our approach to that is, you know, there's two ways you can deal with those type of issues. One is you can put your collective heads in the sand and hope it goes away and moves out of a media cycle. Or the alternative, which is what we're doing, is really stepping into it, making sure that we have a full and thorough processes in place, making sure we do it in an independent way so it's separated from the company, and making sure that we have a safe and diverse workplace. So I'm very, very committed to that. I'm very, very focused on making sure that anyone who has any issues whatsoever feel that there's the right environment to confidentially come forward. And when we see issues, we will investigate them, and we are investigating some at the moment, and we will deal with those. So, you know, there'll be no stone left unturned to make sure that we deal with historic issues and making sure we have a really complementary and modern culture moving forward. That's non-negotiable for me in this role.
Is some of it around, you know, you look at a brand like The Rock, you know, you used the word vibrant before, and I sort of winced a little. Some of it, like that's just basically been a misogynist radio station for a lot of its time. That's almost baked into its brand. Magic Talk, on some level, was set up to be a place where an older, whiter New Zealand could express kind of unreconstituted views. How can you turn organizations or brands that were sort of made to be that way, you know, without just junking them entirely?
Yeah, I mean, that's really quite an interesting analysis, because community standards change and New Zealand changes like all countries change. So what was acceptable, say, 15, 20, 25 years ago is clearly there's some things that aren't acceptable now. So like any business, we just have to evolve and change to make sure, even though our target segment for, you know, radio station A, B might be, you know, 15 to 25 year old males, that doesn't mean the organization can't evolve and change. And that's just something that all modern businesses have to do. So we're very aware and conscious of that. I will say, though, it's not up to, you know, we want to have target audiences across a wide spectrum. Some of the views by, you know, talkback callers or radio hosts won't be consistent with me, but we actually want this vibrant relationship between ourselves and the listeners. And that'll mean that there are some people who disagree with the content, they disagree with the targeting. But as long as we're true to ourselves and the values of the organization, the behaviors and the purpose, I think we're in a good space.
In terms of that piece around like an inconsistency with your views, but kind of having a broader church, one of the things which sort of escalated the Magic Talk situation with John Banks was an advertiser reaction. To what extent do you think that kind of radio is starting to, or some elements of radio are starting to lag advertiser sentiment? And in some, is that helpful to you in a way to have, this is called commercial radio, like, you know, there's a clue in the name, that when society and therefore certain elements of the spend starts to say, well, this is no longer acceptable, that helps make a case for culture change within a big organisation like that?
Well, I'm going to take a step back, because I think there's a bit of a misunderstanding on the John Banks issue, because Once I was made aware of that, which I think was about, you know, 90 minutes after the incident hit the air, we made a very clear and quite frankly easy decision in terms of how we would deal with that. The advertisers who came out publicly against it, we totally agree with them. You know, we're on a unity ticket with Vodafone and those organisations because, you know, why would anyone, and I know in my previous roles, why would you want your brand associated with that kind of nonsense? And it was truly unacceptable and something which is quite embarrassing for the organisation. So you've got to deal with that. I think it's completely separate to our commercial model because we've got to just have really strong and compelling and innovative content which leads our advertisers to want to put their brand close to ours. So they are quite separate. I think what the business I've been working on in the last kind of 12 weeks is what is the company's purpose? And that's we're spending a lot of time as a new executive team. So what is the purpose of MediaWorks and the brands? Why do we turn up for work? How do we communicate that right across New Zealand? And how do we have behaviours that support that company purpose? And once we conclude that work and everyone agrees with it, then we've just got to get back to a really simple business model that says, hey, is this content, is this piece of work, is this creation something which is consistent with our company purpose? And if you have a purpose-led organisation, it gives you the confidence to have innovation and creativity. And there'll always be controversy because it's a live environment. We produce hundreds of hours of live content every week. But as long as we're sticking to our values and our purpose, you know, we'll be fine.
With Magic Talk.
You like talking about Magic Talk, don't you? It's a small part of our portfolio, but I'm happy to talk about it. First-time caller, long-time listener.
the reason that Magic Talk is interesting is because it does feel like it's a cipher for a bigger change that's happening in New Zealand.
Yep.
And I think what you said about things that were acceptable, I mean, John Banks has been saying this stuff for 25 years, and just suddenly he does what in the realm of things that he said is actually just kind of meat and two veg. And it's like the whole country convulses and something that he would have been saying every day for years. Yeah. And so I do think that it feels like the fate of Magic Talk, like where it goes next, will be somehow emblematic of the way that the country is moving. And, you know, by the way,
that's putting a lot of emphasis in one brand in the stable, mate. I was feeling relaxed when I came to the studio. Now I'm feeling stressed about it.
Just doing my job, Cam. But I do think that it's interesting as well because if you look in the States where talk radio is obviously just a massive industry, if anything, it feels like the direction of travel is either static or, you know, moving backwards in terms of what the sort of acceptable realm, that Overton window of discourse. And yet here it feels like it's staying in motion. With Magic Talk, obviously by removing Banks and who was a fill-in and then Sean Plunkett departing not long after, which I assume you probably can't particularly talk about, but it also says something. Do you have a view on where the station might go and whether talk remains viable given the dominance of RNZ in the non-commercial space and on the kind of left-leaning side of the dial and then ZB's just the massive calcified audience over there?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, I'll take a step back and look at the organisation and the market in a competitive sense. And, you know, there's various options. If you look at the segment, the news talk segment, so talk and news, that's a very viable and probably profitable market segment. And I suppose if I was sitting in our competitor's shoes, they'd say, look, if we released our position or removed ourselves from that market segment, that would give them kind of unfettered commercial pricing power, and potentially they would use the profits from that part of the business to kind of focus on other either regional shows or music shows. So that, in my mind, doesn't sound like a very sensible competitive strategy. So like everything, as we develop our overarching strategy for the radio part of the business and how we connect that to outdoor and how we produce content and what we do with talent, we're looking at that market segment. But I'm very focused on news and talk and how we actually bring that product to life in the future. Now, we are looking at a range of options, but what I will say is we are committed to that market segment. So whether it's a complementary product with Magic or it's something new, we are developing a suite of options, and then we'll say, well, what frequency would we launch a potentially a new station? That's one of the options. How do we communicate that? What talent do we need to deliver it to the market? And then most importantly, you know, who would we be targeting? And I'm not on a view that this has to be a hard left or hard right. I mean, I do think there is an opportunity for a new contemporary model, and that's something that we'll need to test. But what we will do is make sure if we go into something new, it will be appropriately funded. We'll have the right audience targeting, we'll have the right frequency, and we'll also have the right resources to make it work. So that's part of what we're doing in the weeks and months ahead as we develop a overarching strategy for the business, because the business's strategy for the last 12 months has been to survive, to divest TV, to create a new hub, which is Hargreaves Street. Now it's about what is the new era as New Zealand's leading radio and outdoor business. Two profitable parts of the business that we can now use as a catalyst for growth. And whether that's growth more in, you know, MediaWorks events, whether it's MediaWorks Digital, whether it's doing something completely different, whether it's developing hard strategic partnerships, or whether we want to become a free independent media business that just tactically works with other market participants. All these things are up for debate and up for discussion as we speak. And certainly a core part of that is the news product. I mean, I'm a news junkie, so I'm always going to be very focused on saying we need a very vibrant news. And I think it'll be good for the market to have competition in that segment as well.
So in terms of that, there is a sort of space. I mean, I think that it's really interesting to hear that sense of, like, if we vacate, then ZB owns the vacuum and you know, can turn on the profit jets potentially with you know, that.
Yep.
But there also, it feels to me like, especially like we were talking before about listening to podcasts almost constantly, that is something that is, you would expect as an adjacency would be a huge area of emphasis for any kind of radio network, yet it doesn't feel to me as an outside observer of either NZME or MediaWorks that either of them has made, there's been platform and distribution plays, but not necessarily content plays as hard and fast as you might expect. Certainly compared to, say, someone like RNZ, which has put a lot of effort in there. Do you see that as an opportunity and as kind of baked into a sort of a more innovation-facing element of a new reborn MediaWorks post the split?
Yeah, absolutely. I think organisations that have historic profit pools and revenue pools that don't innovate and disrupt their own revenue streams are always under threat.
So Sky being a classic example in our industry.
Yeah, and that's something we're really challenging ourselves, and I suppose that's some of the limited value that I can bring to the organisation as an outsider to say, well, how do we reposition the business both with partnerships and platforms and digital innovations, which may mean that we reduce some of our legacy revenue in the short term, but we've got to set this business up for the next decade and saying, well, yes, it may have a short-term impact, but that's really about the investment platform, and you've got to believe that the future will be different. So that's something that we're very actively talking about in terms of how we reposition the business. So that's definitely high on the agenda.
The Fold is brought to you by oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa, with over 4,000 out-of-home advertising sites nationwide across both street furniture and retail centres. I'm super grateful to oMedia for enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
One thing which I think...
I don't use Zoom. I hate Zoom.
It's a horrible medium, and yet I've been on a lot of them this year. The broader media, one thing which you and I have discussed, and the point which I think you've made very well in various forums, is the extent to which we don't speak with one voice compared to almost any other industry. There isn't a sense of us having a kind of a group position. Do you think that remain so, and what are the sort of, how does that impact you as an industry versus, say, somewhere like, you know, wine growing or some of these kind of more Honestly, I'm going to use the word. They feel a bit more grown up. Like, and you might have your individual purposes, but there is also a general kind of NZ Inky kind of purpose for the whole system.
Yeah, I think we're making some progress there, and I think that's out of necessity. So if you look at the last decade of media in New Zealand, there's been a lot of change, a lot of churn. I mean, if you look at the three commercial media organisations, we employ around 2,000 people, but I'm sure that number would have been 3,500 a decade ago. So there's been a tremendous amount of focus on the resilience of individual businesses, and also there's been some ownership change and churn. So I can understand how the individual media participants have been focusing on their business and their survival and how they reposition. I think now with what's happened in Australia with the social media legislation and the opportunity for two really deep structural changes in this market, one being, you know, how do we find a pathway to get social media giants to contribute in a more positive and modern way to New Zealand society, whether it's through tax or paying for content, and there's different ways and means of doing that. Or secondly, another big structural change that is a kind of a once in a generation is the Radio New Zealand TVNZ merger. So I've come into this role in this environment or this market in a time of still tremendous change, but those are two massive things that collectively the leaders of the media organisations have to collaborate on. And I've been really surprised at how welcoming, you know, Sinead and Michael and yourself and KK and everyone else has been to welcome me into the fold, no pun intended. And I think we are having more robust and more comprehensive and deeper conversations about how we present ourselves as a collective media to either the minister, to the government, or, you know, ultimately to our listeners and the viewers and the readers of their products.
Just on the social media thing, do you have a view on, you know, that Australia, that extraordinary, I know both of us were kind of popcorn watching the sort of Facebook news ban go down. Do you have a view on the extent to which a similar model would work here, or whether there is a more self-regulation approach? Like, what's a best system design for you?
Well, this would be a very long podcast if you asked me what is my view on Australian politics. what I would say is I was deeply impressed with the Finance Minister, Josh Frydenberg, and the level of tenacity that he displayed to stand up to the social media giants. I thought it was abhorrent the way that some of that started to evolve into Facebook, you know, generally wanting to really steer down democracy in a Western civilized country like Australia. So I think there has to be a pretty well-defined balance between the carrot and stick. And I think the Australian example gave you clear evidence that social media giants will come to the table, but they have to be dragged to the table. And I think whatever deal that we establish in New Zealand, we have to be very pragmatic and mindful that there has to be the right incentives to get the deals done. I mean, if you look at the power imbalance between media organisations in Australia versus New Zealand, you'd say actually it's worse in New Zealand, not better. So we're very enthusiastic. I think the whole media industry is enthusiastic and engaged in getting a deal done. I think the time is right to structurally create, whether it's a taxation policy or whether it's commercial agreements, to that we address this imbalance that exists. So, yeah, we'll see how this evolves, but I think the time is right now to get this done.
Just switching to that other big kind of current looming situation, the RNZ TVNZ merger. Do you have a view on that, on whether it should go ahead and how, you know, how it should ideally be structured? And obviously, there's some degree of self interest in there, isn't there?
Some degree. There's a large portion of self interest.
Well, it's good that you acknowledge that, because a lot of the time you talk to people in radio and they're like, it doesn't matter because they're non commercial, but they're all it's an attention economy, right?
Yeah. I mean, clearly, what all commercial media organisations will be concerned about is the industry profit pools, which largely are advertising, and how much of the advertising dollar will potentially be soaked up by this entity being half commercial, you know, 30% commercial or completely non-commercial. So our philosophy on this is we want to be involved at the early stages. We want to have an open dialogue and we want to have full and frank conversations about what it could and should be. And then I think the government will be very supportive. And the government, you know, and the minister has been very supportive of the industry, especially in the last 18 months. So we just want our voice heard in this discussion, this debate, and they'll create it and craft it the way they should because they're the government. But ultimately, I think New Zealand needs a really strong public broadcaster. You know, whether it's the ABC or whether it's BBC, there's clearly a place for it. They produce some fantastic content. They are a competitor, but they're also complementary. So, no, we support it. We just want to make sure that we have the right voice as it starts to be created.
Now that you've, you know, I mean, you've said that you're doing this work on purpose and so on. And obviously some of this will flow out of that. But what do you see as opportunities that are interesting, whether they're in terms of kind of areas of space that MediaWorks could occupy or yep. sort of new innovations? I don't get the sense that you're going to sort of stand pat and kind of steady as she goes yep. with this thing.
Yeah.
Are there sort of particular areas of what is, you know, paradoxically, media is both as innovative as it's ever been. Mm. You know, I have at various times argued it's too innovative,
yep.
but also it's financially challenged. Are there particular things that you know, see locally or internationally that stand out as areas that you think you have a license to play in and some of the tools to get into?
Yeah, I mean, we've just started this process. Broadly speaking, I think in my mind, strategy is ultimately about choices and where you decide to put your investment. So like any organisation, we'll have to put some capital and some funding in some places that we see vibrant opportunities. So if you look at our core business, that's profitable and performing well, both outdoor and radio. So then we look at MediaWorks, events and digital. And clearly for us, we need to look at what are going to be our structural strategic partnerships in the market and how could we make those work? And we could make those work on a tactical or structural or even an equity sense. We need to look at outdoor in terms of what is our share in the market and could we gain more share? There's a digitalization dividend you can get through that business. But then how do we wrap, you know, more sophisticated loyalty around our products and services, either around the master brand or some of the sub-brands? How do we focus in on subscription models and how do we get that reoccurring revenue stream going and how do we create market differentiation? Do we build platforms ourselves and try and control the data and become a more sophisticated advertiser in terms of the way we manage demand for retailers? Or do we, you know, do we actually partner with someone who already has an existing platform overseas? So all of these options are being considered, and I suppose in the next 4 to 6 weeks, we'll start channeling in and down to 3 or 4 core opportunities to say, these are things we want to do. How would we invest in them? And how big is the opportunity? Because what I've noticed is there's a couple of opportunities that we've invested in, but even if we were tremendously successful, you know, the results wouldn't actually turn the dial much. So we have to be quite conscious of only putting our energy, our labor, our attention, and our capital into opportunities that actually make the business go faster, be better and be bigger and provide more employment opportunities and more profit for ultimately our shareholders.
Interesting you mentioned recurring revenue, which is you know, we're in that business too through our members program, and it is astonishingly helpful in terms of just being able to sort of forecast and have some level of stability around what is when you're just purely or mostly an advertising-driven business, can be very lumpy. I mean, the last year has shown that in a quite terrifying way at times. But audio, outside of the likes of a Spotify, hasn't been particularly – there hasn't been a huge amount of sort of success either in a local or a global area in the subscription models. Where do you see the opportunity – for MediaWorks, or what's interesting to you in that space?
Well, we're in the early stages looking at that, but I mean, obviously some of the new emerging models that haven't got subscription but are looking more interesting are models like Clubhouse. And I think that's getting back to the value proposition. What is unique? What are people prepared to pay for? And how can you deliver them something which they can't get through different channels? That's really going to be around this kind of ongoing theme about hyper-localization, how that actually plays out. And I think New Zealand's in a bit of a fortunate position in terms of both the market position of a kind of duopoly, but also the fact that we're so small that some of the large market participants probably aren't interested in New Zealand. So I do think there is more of an opportunity to focus on localization than in most other markets. So that's something that we're working and looking on at the moment. I mean, if I take a step back and look at some of the radio assets and the way we deal with our customers, our loyalty and our products, in my mind, they have been, you know, what I'd kind of pleasantly say is quite traditional. And I think they do need to be refreshed. We do need to look at things about, in 5 years, would this be something that we really want to invest in? Is this something tactical or is it really deeply strategic? So these are the things we're looking at.
Sounds like you've got a lot of work on, which I will let you get back to. But thank you so much for coming on the Fold, Cam, and for being so open about both the sort of challenges and opportunities and where you're trying to head with this thing.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. And as I said, I'm a big fan of many of your podcasts, mostly the political ones. But at some stage, you'll invite me back for one of those. And it's great to be here. And it's actually fantastic to be part of this industry and the people who make it what it is.
Yeah, I think there's something about, I often talk about, like we've, you know, you're probably right that it has lost maybe a third of its workforce over the last year. But that lifers thing, those who are left behind in media now are a real specific type of creature, and they're quite fun to be around.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, mate.
That was The Fold, brought to you by our partners at oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Huge thanks to oMedia for sponsoring this episode of The Fold and enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.